Tonight we want to cover 8 verses in the 11th chapter of the book of Ecclesiastes. I'm going to take verses 9 and 10, the last 2 verses in the chapter, and tie them together in chapter 12. And I call this section, Small Service, Great Returns. It's not often that people think about the little things or doing the little things having a great, great impact. But they do. Person laying in a hospital bed, hasn't seen anybody all day long, but nurses and doctors and technicians and so forth, and a familiar face walks in and spends 20 minutes. That doesn't mean anything to that patient laying in a hospital bed, does it? Here's a person who's just lost a loved one. It's been a month, 2 months ago. You know, all the crowds and the food and so forth, that's already come and gone. Everybody's back to their routine, their way of life. And all of a sudden, somebody just drops a little note about that, you know, like postage stamp size almost. It says, I was thinking of you today. I keep praying for you. That little thing doesn't mean much to that person 2 months after the funeral's been over, right? Small things. God is a God of small things. Sometimes we may think, well, Lord, give me a big job, because that's an important job, a big job. And by doing the big job, I'll get some notoriety from it. At least it'll make me feel good because I've done something big. But the little thing, you know, like unlocking the doors or locking the doors back, or somebody dropped something in the bathroom, they didn't pick it up, so I'll pick it up and throw it in the garbage can. Little thing. But it means something, doesn't it? Little things mean you've given thought to the detail. Now, Ecclesiastes is a book written by Solomon, guided by the Holy Spirit, written primarily to young people, likely of marriageable age, but we would not put them in the case of old and full of years, like an Abraham or a Job or someone like that. But it has to do with, we're trying to see life under the sun, and how should I observe the day-to-day activities of life, and it really be worth something? Really be worth something. Verse 1, cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. Does that make sense to you? By the way, the word bread there, and you can read this in commentaries, and I don't recommend you read commentaries to find out all the truth about passages, because comments are just comments, regardless of whose they are. But the word there is implied seed bread. In other words, you put your seed in the water. Mostly, we put our seed in the ground, don't we? Okay? And expect through moisture and weather conditions, heat, and so forth, that something would grow from it, and then it would pollinate, and then it would produce the fruit, and then the harvest, and then the food, and so forth. Cast your bread on the water. In many days, you'll get a product from that. In looking at this, things that don't seem to make sense, even Jesus talked about little things. What about the widow that gave the 2 mites? When everybody else gave of their abundance, the widow giving her 2 mites. Did that mean anything to Jesus? Most people would comment on the abundance of what they gave out of the abundance that they gave. Jesus commented on the little things. Jesus also commented one day, according to John chapter 6, of multitudes on a mountainside or hillside. I guess it'd be a hill instead of a mountain, so to speak. And they were hungry. And there was a small lad there. He had 5 loaves and 2 fish. Now, that might be a lot for a little boy, but the fact of the matter is, Jesus took that small amount and fed the multitudes. Even the apostles were astonished that Jesus would even think about feeding them with what little he had. By the way, not only did Jesus feed those multitudes, they had baskets full left over. What about the statement Jesus said, if you give even a cup of cold water in my name or in the name of a disciple, you will not lose your reward. What does a cup of water mean to anybody? Let's suppose someone tonight, after services is over, goes and gets a little cup down in the Bethel room, runs to a water fountain, and puts it about halfway up, and just walks up to you and sticks it in front of you. Would you think anything about that? Well, if you were thirsty, you would, right? Okay. If you were not thirsty, you might not think much about it. Well, I appreciate the thought, but really I don't want the water right now. But a person is thirsty. Before we actually get into the details of these eight verses, there is a group of people that are thru-hikers on the Appalachian Trail. They have a name for these people. They call them trail angels. Trail angels. And they actually talk about the provisions that these people leave behind on this trail or out in an intersection with a trail crossroad. Trail magic. That's the terminology that's used by these thru-hikers. Okay? And trail magic and these trail angels, they talk about these people on and on and on and on and on about the kindness of showing them these things. I've been following a particular thru-hiker all year. He's through now. He finished in Maine. He's back home. His name was Hudson. I followed him all the way from Georgia to Maine this year. And he was talking about a particular place on the trail where there is a cooler from a religious group, a church. And this cooler always has in it, or typically has in it, at your discretion, you just lift the cooler up, ice. People go up there every other day, so to speak, through the season. They put ice in there and they put soft drinks in there. This is, by the way, it's a long hike to bring that in to where this cooler is. But these hikers that are going through there, and then they see that, their eyes light up, and they lift it up, and it says, at your disposal, compliments of, and then it gives the name of this religious group. And they talk about these people. Talk about people giving them rides, just a ride into town. Do you think that means anything to a thru-hiker? To go back into town to resupply and bring them back to the trail so that they can continue on their work? I mean, these people do this every year, guys. Every year they do this. Matter of fact, there's a woman named Miss Janet. She does it year-round, and she does it consistently, and she follows these hikers up the trail to help them all the way into the New England states. And they think about it. What makes you sacrifice what you're doing for people that are total strangers to you? We have a goal, and you're trying to help us reach our goal? That's right. Why? Because I like you. Because I want to help you. Because I want you to have something to eat. I want you to have something to drink. Maybe I can repair part of your equipment. And you think, that's what the church ought to be doing. The little things. The little things that these people are doing for these thru-hikers, those people never forget it. I remember years ago when we lived at Neal, Pam and I and Benjamin lived at Neal. Daniel and Hannah were born when we moved here. There was a small family, young couple, by the way, husband and wife. They didn't have any children. And their house burned in the Neal community. Lost everything. Lost it all. All the possessions inside and the structure. Word came to the church at Neal, which didn't have but 50 members and wasn't a high-income congregation anyway. Matter of fact, I guess to a large degree it still isn't. A little rural congregation down on Danville Road. Word came, just announced to the congregation, here is a couple, they're not members of the church, nobody's related to them at Neal, but they have a huge loss. An individual had a couch, a sofa, that they were no longer going to use. They bought a brand new one. They wanted to know what to do with the old one, and it wasn't wore out, it was just they wanted a new one. Next thing you know, put it on the back of a pickup truck. We'll put some canned goods together. We'll find out what their sizes are, clothes and so forth. We'll pile it all up there. We'll just pull up to their house one day. Sure enough, when we pulled up to the house, to the site where they were renting, by the way, because they couldn't afford to buy a new place, they were renting this place, and all of a sudden it's like, who are you people? Well, we're from the Neal Church of Christ. We found out that you had a total loss in your structure, and we've come here to give you this. give us this. That's right. This is yours. The sofa is yours, or you can sell it, take the money, whatever. The canned goods are yours. You know, here's some clothes that possibly fit you. If they don't, tell us what your sizes are. And I remember the guy. I remember him saying, really, he says, I will never forget you people. I'll never forget you people. You know what the church is supposed to do? Let's do the little things. Okay? Little things have big results. Jesus talked about such like that. So let's look at this. Number one, sowing your seed. One commentary said on Ecclesiastes 11 and 1, in Egypt, the Nile River, when it would get into flood stages in the late winter, early spring, the waters would come up into what was known as the very, very fertile soil in the banks where it would overflow and the water would go into those crevices and cracks. And then after the spring rains, when it would get from spring to summer, the water would begin to recede back as it comes back to the normal banks of the Nile River. And all of this great sediment that had come from the North Mountains, or actually the South Mountains going north, because the Nile River flows north, it says all of this fertile elements that would be in the mountains and in the lands and so forth would filter into that fertile ground. If you put your seed in the water, the seed would filter out in. The water would actually plant your seed for you. So you had the moisture and you had the plantation of it. And then all of a sudden it would just boom. It would grow because it had already the moisture in it. The seed didn't rot. And they knew how to plant it that way. I'm not real sure that's what Solomon's referred to here. Solomon's not in Egypt, by the way. He did marry an Egyptian. That was his first wife. Cast your seed on the water. Cast your bread on the water. He'll mention several passages in here about sowing. For example, verse 4, he that observes the wind shall not sow. And notice verse 6, in the morning sow thy seed, and in the evening withhold not thy hand. So he is talking about sowing something. Cast your bread. Sow your bread on the water. Doesn't seem to make sense. In many days, what will happen? You will find it afterwards. Many days. In other words, you'll reap a product that comes from this. Little thing. I remember when Mom and Dad first decided that we were always going to have a garden. Notice I said always. And I remember when we moved to Bremen, Georgia, we didn't have a garden spot Dad thought was worth anything. Didn't have get enough sunlight down in that pine thicket. So he and another family decided, a man of another family decided, that behind the church building was a lot that had some sort of scrubby pine trees and nobody was maintaining it. And so Dad asked the elders at Bremen if this particular deacon and he could share that spot back there and put a garden in. And the elders agreed to it. How many of you have ever plowed the new ground? If I were to ask you, do you even know what the new ground is? If I were to ask you young people, what do you know about the new ground? Well, what a new ground is it is area that has never been cultivated for crops. And you create now a brand new plot by taking out the trees and the stumps and the rocks and the roots and whatever. I learned as a late teenager what the new ground was. And a push plow. Putting a push plow in the new ground. By the way, roots that pop up and slap you on the shin bone don't feel very good. But that's the new ground. And then Dad says, once we get all of this prepared, I'd always worked in garden spots that all the roots and the stumps and all that was already out of it. It was just a matter of plowing it, getting the seed in the ground, cultivating it, maintaining it, harvesting, eating, plowing it under, waiting till the wintertime. I knew what a garden was. But the little things. No, you've got to get that root out. Okay? And we've got to dig this stump up. Well, to me, that was a big job. He says, no, all of this has to be tended to. So I didn't get into much trouble that summer because you had the new ground. It'll keep you occupied. Okay? It's hard work not to go to Kroger to buy your groceries or Publix or wherever is your grocery store of choice. Israelis had markets, but guess where the produce from those markets came from? By the way, Where do you think the gallon of milk you buy at the grocery store comes from? Where do you think the can of green beans on the shelf, where do you really think that came from? Came from a magic store where they always have green beans in a can. No, some farmer grew those beans, right? Okay. Some farmer had them picked and they processed them and ultimately they put them in that can and it's for your convenience. But way back beyond all of that is somebody's real hard labor, hard work. Okay? Verse 2. He'll talk about from 2 to 6 serving other people. By the way, serving and helping those who are actually serving to help you. Give a portion to 7 and also to 8, for thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth. In other words, here's 7 or 8 people that are helping you in this project. Okay, and it comes to the end of the day, what are you to do? According to agriculture, you paid them at the end of the day. So you give the portions to each one as he served you. By the way, if you frauded him, what's he going to do tomorrow when he comes for work? By the way, he's not coming back to your field. He'll go to somebody else's field to work. Because you don't pay him, he's not going to work for free. So when it comes to portions, to 7 to 8, give him a portion. Look at verse 3. If the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves on the earth. If a tree falls toward the south or toward the north, in the place where the tree falls, there it shall be. I've always thought that was sort of a silly statement. When the tree falls, there it will be. Well, that's sort of a no-brainer, isn't it? But what he's talking about is a storm. Look at the next line. He that observes the wind, meaning observe the wind, means he's observing the weather, and he's observing a weather that's not favorable for what he thinks he ought to be doing. He that observes the wind or gives concern to the wind shall not sow, and he that regards the clouds shall not reap. Meaning what? I don't believe it's convenient today to plant. I just don't believe it's a convenient situation today to harvest. So what are you going to do with the rest of your day? Well, it never rains on the golf course, so I'm going to go play golf. Or it never storms on the lake, I'm going to go fishing. By the way, if you got food out here you need to provide for your family and you need to tend to your garden or your field or your harvest or your grapes, okay? Yeah, I understand that, but it just don't look like today is a good day. So, my buddies want to go down here, and that's what we're going to do. I remember my dad, or Phyllis's dad as well, talking about one day his father, my grandfather, put Dad in the field plowing with a mule. And Dad knew how to do that, being the oldest of 6 kids, and being supposed to be the responsible one. He's out there plowing. All of a sudden, Dad said one day, a bunch of his buddies were headed to the creek to go swimming. You know, they had their towel. By the way, that's all they had was their towel, if you know country folks. They was going to the creek to go swimming. And they were yipping and yelling and screaming and so forth. And they would scream out to Dad, "Hey, we're going swimming. Come on with us." He's like, "Wished I could. I got a plow." "Well, we won't be long. You know, let's just go on down here to the creek. You can come right back and get right behind the plow. Your daddy won't met." "Wished I could. I got a plow." He said that was bad enough to get behind that old plow with that mule that didn't want to be in that field any more than he did. Plowing that road, he says, it was worse hearing my friends walking down that old dirt trail to the creek to go swimming the whole time I'm behind that mule. But my daddy knew what his daddy would do if he didn't do that job. "Why'd you go swimming? Why'd you go to the creek?" "Because they asked me to." "Did I tell you you could go to the creek?" "Well, no, sir." "Then why'd you do that? Don't you know we've got to eat? Don't you know we got to plant a crop? Don't you know we got to tend to this crop? Don't you know winter's coming? Don't you know we got bill?" "Well, yeah. Yes, sir." "Then do it." Sort of called a reality check, isn't it? I remember one day working with the Boy Scouts. By the way, if you ever want to break a kid from not being responsible with his items, take him out at night and force him to have to find his stuff in the dark when his mother packed everything for him. Deborah Keene, remember this incident. It's a little boy we had. I think he's 11. He had to be about 11 or 12. Daryl and I and a bunch of other dads and Boy Scouts went to Gunnersville State Park in January. We was going to see the eagles, the bald eagles, fly out there at that park. By the way, here's another one of those little things. Okay? Had a young man. Of course, we're going to build a campfire to keep from freezing to death in the month of January. The wind was coming out of the north straight off Lake Gunnersville into our campsite. We had air conditioning when you didn't need air conditioning. Okay? We're going to get up and be at Hoax Bluff by 5 a.m. to watch the eagles come off the roost. By the way, it looked like big blackbirds in the dark. And when we got back to our campsite, the eagles were flying right over our campsite at 6:30 in the sunshine. We didn't even have to get up. All we had to do was just get up when the sun come up. It's flying over. We didn't know that, by the way. But this one little boy, his mother packed everything for him. He didn't have a clue what was in his kit, his gear. He's freezing to death. It comes time to go to bed, and that campfire is roaring. He wants to sit around that campfire while all we're going to get in our tent, getting our sleeping bags. Daryl walks up to this young man, said, you got something to put on your head? No, sir. He says, why don't you? He said, my mama packed all this. I don't know what's anything in here. Daryl had an extra toboggan. He said, here, put this on. That'll help you feel better. By the way, young man not only put it on, he kept it. Deborah King never got that back. Here's another thing to learn. That boy quit the Boy Scouts the next day. This wasn't for him. I'm not going to have this. Okay? There's a statement over in Jeremiah that says, if you are weary when you run with the foot, and I'm paraphrasing this, so to speak, what will you do? How will you contend with the horses? That's the little things, right? If the foot soldier wearies you, what are you going to do when the cavalry comes? Is the idea. You're going to give up with this? What are you going to do when it gets tougher? When it really gets hard? Oh, it's not convenient to go to church. You see, the weather's bad. By the way, this is just November, isn't it? We ain't even got to December, January, and February. See, it's not convenient. It's not conducive to my being able to do stuff. I've known people to go to work with a severe headache. And then, no, I can't come to church and you see them at Walmart Sunday afternoon. I've actually had people tell me, wasn't so-and-so at church today? I said, no, I didn't say, well, I saw him at Walmart today. Reckon they'll be here tonight. Well, hope so. Must be feeling better there at Walmart. Guess what? No, I just couldn't go to church at all today. But I had to go to Walmart because I needed something. Happens all the time, doesn't it? Little things. Notice the next line. Verse 5, as thou knowest not what is the way of the Spirit, or how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child, even so thou knowest not the works of God who makes it all. In other words, does God give the sunshine? Does He give the warm temperatures that make things convenient? All the time. Does God also send the storms and the rain and the cold that can make it inconvenient for get out? All the time in the seasons. So you mean God gives the cold, and God gives the warmth, and God gives the rain, and God gives the sunshine? That's right. All of those are God's works. Sometimes it doesn't fit our schedule. Well, it's not meant to fit our schedule. I wrote a bulletin article this past month. I hope you read it. If you didn't, I'll give you the gist of it. It's called Joseph and Adjusting. Joseph, son of Jacob, and Adjusting. Joseph had to adjust when his mother and his paternal grandfather died. When Isaac died, that was a blow. Okay. Also, when Joseph's mother died in childbirth, that was a blow to Joseph. He has a biological brother named Benjamin he was very, very close to because he had both father and the same mother. What did Joseph's brothers do with him when it comes time that he's 17 years old? That's a critical age, isn't it? 17, guess you'd be a junior or senior in high school. What did his brothers do to him? Well, they relocated him. Sold him to the Midianites. Speak evil of him. What does Joseph do? Rebels against God, rebels against his daddy, rebels against his family? It's not Joseph. The Lord's with Joseph. Joseph's with the Lord. Ends up in Egypt, ends up in Potiphar's house. Had an easy time of it in Potiphar's house, didn't he? Oh no, Sister Potiphar has fangs and claws. By the way, not sister in the sense of church, just in the family of Potiphar. Next thing you know, she lies about him because Joseph won't do what she wants. Joseph ends up in the inner prison. By the way, that's death row in Egypt. How do I know that's death row? Because one man freed from death row goes back to service and the other man is hanged in 3 days after having been there. That's death row. 2 years later, Pharaoh has a dream, remembers Joseph. The baker's the one hanged. The butler remembers his error and he sends for Joseph. Joseph comes and tells Pharaoh his dream. And at 30 years old, Joseph is elevated to second in Egypt. I made the comment in the Bulletin article, I wonder what Potiphar's wife thought about Joseph being second in Egypt. The Bible don't say anything about that, does it? That little lie she told about Joseph in chapter 39 and chapter 41 of Genesis, Joseph is number two in Egypt. Joseph has authority over Potiphar and Potiphar's wife if they're still married. Reckon she wants to be nice to Joseph now. The one thing about Joseph was, never retaliated. That's not Joseph. That's not a boy from 17 now to a man of 30. That's not Joseph. I will adjust to whatever the circumstances are. It's like the Apostle Paul said in Philippians 4:11, I have learned in whatsoever state or condition I'm in, therewith to be content. And by the way, that's the background to, I can do all things through Christ that strengthens me, verse 13 of that same chapter. In other words, the Lord's going to be with me in the good times, the Lord's going to be with me in the difficult times, and regardless of what the conditions are tomorrow, the Lord's on my side, and I'm going to get up and get busy. I'm going to sow when it's not convenient. I'm going to reap when it's not convenient. And obviously I'm going to sow and reap when it is convenient. But even if the conditions aren't favorable, I'll still sow that seed and I'll still serve other people. Now let's look at the next section here. Actually, we didn't look at verse 6, did we? In the morning sow thy seed, the evening withhold not thy hand, for thou knowest not whether shall prosper, neither this or that, whether they both be shall be alike be good. In other words, you don't know the future. God only knows the future. But God does expect you to try. Let me go back to the concept here before we go to the last two verses, 7 and 8. Go to the concept of sowing spiritual seed. Because that's really what the church's work is about, right? Sowing spiritual seed. You never know. Sunday school teacher, Wednesday night teacher, mom, dad, grandmama, granddaddy. You never know what one verse really put into the mind of a child can really do. You never know that. There are some pretty amazing things that are happening in the Sunday school program here, and the reason I know that is some of the teachers are telling me this. What some of these young kids, children in our congregation, are actually retaining in their knowledge. It's fascinating to watch that. As a matter of fact, not only are they learning from the teacher teaching that, they're learning things by observation, by watching. They're not just watching me. That sort of goes without saying. They're watching you. I can name you the names of some what we call older members of this congregation. There are younger people of this congregation that look up to you. really do look up to you. At Camp Nayati, I tried to impress upon the class that I teach, ninth grade through first year of college. I said, all these young junior campers down here, I said, these kids think you the greatest thing on two legs down here. They don't give a flip about us counselors. We're old fuddy-duddies. But they want to be you. They watch how you behave. They listen to how you talk. They watch who you associate with. And you watch your influence because they're your shadow if you let them. And they would almost pass out if you walked up to them just haphazardly, walked up and said, hey, good morning, I'm so-and-so. Who are you? I'd like to know your name. Me? Know my name? You think a 9-10-year-old kid has any interest whatsoever in being accepted by a 16-17-year-old kid? You think that wouldn't be the highlight of a kid's day? Well, Tom Holland used to teach us when I was at Fried Hardeman, as it related to preacher and his work. Sometimes I've done this, sometimes I don't. But he said, you want to make an impact on the parents of congregations? Show attention to their children. I know for one, that makes an impact on me when you show my kids some attention. By the way, it goes without saying what mama down here thinks about that. Brother Holland said, when a small child's walking by, you're up here like Goliath. You're a giant. You may stick your big hand down there, and that kid's afraid of you. He says, here's what you do. If you can, by the way, he said, if you can, squat down as low as you possibly can and get eye to eye with that small child. And talk to that child as though you're down there on the level with that child. Now, you might not be able to stand back up. But get down there on the level where that small child is. Because number one, the parent notices what you've done. And the child really will know what you've done. I've got to tell you this about Brother Winford Claiborne. We met with Jody Apple this afternoon, who works with International Gospel Hour. Brother Claiborne did that for many, many years. V.E. Howard was the founder of the International Gospel Hour. 60 years, V.E. Howard radio program. Now, Brother Claiborne's funeral this past Friday, I was there. Phyllis was there as well, and Jody was there as well. It's a lot of people, a lot of preachers. Even E. Claude Gardner from Fried Hardeman was there. He's 90 years old, E. Claude Gardner. It said the one thing you could notice about Brother Winford Claiborne was the older people respected him. He was 88 to be 89 this year if he had lived to see his birthday. He said, but every child at the West Fayetteville Church of Christ loved Winford Claiborne. He said, when Winford Claiborne was in a wheelchair, had rolled Brother Claiborne in a wheelchair in his last couple of years. He says, most young children are scared of people in a wheelchair. He says, not Winford Claiborne. He says, there was hardly a child in the West Fayetteville congregation that when they saw him come in and take his position, which would be up toward the front where he would normally sit, says every child would come and hug his neck while he's in the wheelchair. He says, now that says something about you. If children that young want to give you some time. By the way, what do you think that did for Brother Claiborne? You think that did anything for Winford Claiborne? A widower, a man with pancreatic cancer, dying? You think that did anything for Winford? A hug by a small child to an aged man who'd been the pulpit preacher of that congregation for years. You think that meant anything to Winford Claiborne? Little things. Just the little things. Now look at 7 and 8. Truly, the light is sweet. It is a pleasant thing for the eyes to behold the sun. But if a man live many years, rejoice in them all, yet let him remember the days of darkness, for they shall be many, and all that cometh is vanity. Meaning, under the sun. By the way, how many of us enjoy having birthdays? You like having birthdays? I heard a man not long ago talking about his birthday, and they said, "How old are you?" He says, "Well, it beats the alternative of where I could be." What do you mean by that? The grave. When you stop having birthdays. There's a verse back in Ecclesiastes that I'll not go back and read. It says, "Better to be a living dog than a dead lion." A lot of truth in there, isn't it? Better to be a living dog. By the way, dogs were not highly respected in the days of the Israelites. They were the, what we call, the garbage collectors of the town. By the way, it was the dogs that licked the sores of Lazarus at the rich man's doorstep. Dogs are the ones that ate Jezebel's carcass. You remember that? Dogs were not your domesticated animal. They were your wild animal out here that was a dog, and they basically ate whatever there was out there, licked whatever there was out there, and they're not very sanitary, to be honest with you, up front. And by the way, they will bite you if provoked. Sometimes my dog won't bite. No, your dog has teeth. Your dog will bite. I've been dog bit twice. All dogs will bite you if provoked. Or if they just don't, if they feel threatened or whatever. Better to be a living dog than to go out in a blaze of glory like a lion. But you're dead. Now what? You don't have any more life down here to be serving God. Now you wait the judgment for your eternal destiny. Doesn't mean you lose consciousness, but there's no more serving Him down here. You don't see the light of day. How many of us think about in the morning, I don't know what the weather's supposed to be, if it's clear or partly cloudy or stormy or whatever tomorrow, to be able to go to bed at night and then wake up and see the sunlight again. Get to see a new day. Well, that's a small thing. Get to see the sun set. That's a small thing. How many of you have ever been to a place where people applaud when the sun sets below the horizon? There's a city in the United States of America in an area called Mallory Square. And people from that town and people who visit that town, every day of the year, I don't mean just one day of the year, every day of the year, walk out to this square in this city in the United States of America, and when the sun sets below the horizon of the Gulf of Mexico, they all clap. They all applaud the sun going down. That, by the way, that is Key West, Florida. Key West, Mallory Square. It's one of the strangest things I believe I ever observed. The whole town applauds when the sun sets below the ocean. I thought, big deal. You see this just about every day. They make that a big deal in that town. Sun comes up, they don't applaud that. They applaud when it goes down. I don't know the background to it, but they do. Simple things. Simple things. Before you go to bed, good night, I love you. Good night. That don't mean a thing, does it, Pam Clark? That don't mean a thing. By the way, that's what she says to me, not what I say to her. And then I respond back, love you too. That's my response. Okay? By the way, what if I didn't say love you too? Every night, good night, love you. What if I just kept quiet, guys? By the way, y'all got an extra bedroom? You got an extra place for me to come stay at your place that night? Little things. Let me ask you, husbands. Do any of you know the little thing your wife would love to see from you? Or some little thing she sort of expects from you? What if you forget it? Big mistake, right? Don't forget my birthday. Don't forget my anniversary. Let me tell you something. You can forget a lot of other things, too, and have as major a mistake as that right there. What about it, wives, or anything about your husbands? What about parents? Anything about your kids? The kids to the parents? What about members of the church to members of the church? What about a child of God to the Father in heaven? You think the Father does not seek worshipers to worship Him? John 4:23 says that. What is a little bit of my time on a Sunday to my Father in heaven? The Father seeks such to worship Him. True worshipers worship in spirit and truth. It's what the Father asks. It's what the Father desires. Little things. What to you and to me may seem like routine and old hat, that's a big thing to the Father in heaven. So if you're here tonight, and we've looked at several of these passages, you know, sowing the good seed, what you do in your life, the activities of life, serving other people, serving particularly those that are also in the same work that you're doing, seeing the light of day and understanding, being able to see just another day to serve God, that's a big deal. For those of us that are older, it becomes more of a big deal as we get older, isn't it? But this book was not originally written to older people, though it would apply to us. It's written to young folks to understand the simple things, the small things. It may seem small to have an invitation song like Brother Jerry Hogg mentioned today, but I wholeheartedly consented to allow him to preach, and I'm glad I did. Because he didn't do anything but remind me again the importance of preaching and reaching out to others, and particularly what it is when you come to the close of a service. The sun's gone down tonight. We'll not see another sunrise in this part of the world. Tonight, today, this day. And for too long, there won't be many hours, and there won't be a November the 23rd, 2014 ever. There'll be, Lord willing, a November the 24th, 2014 for our day after midnight, the sun comes up in our activities. There won't ever be another day like this. Somewhere in your calendar, those of you that have been baptized, you know there is a date that's very special to you. Mine's January the 26th, 1970. That was my spiritual birthday. I'll never forget that as long as I live. That Sunday morning in Austinville, in the dead of winter, I was thankful we had a warm baptistry inside a building. Remember that day like I knew my own birthday, January 27, 1957. But today could be your birthday. Today could be, to a lot of people, a small thing, but to you, big rewards. Greatest reward of all. Child of God. Name written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Hope of heaven. Everything associated with the blessings in Christ. If you're here tonight, you need to be baptized to Christ. Let's make that great confession. Show forth through your baptism the fact that you're crucifying that old man. Raise that old man out of that watery grave. Obviously, in your confession, showing your faith in Christ. That you believe with all your heart He is the Son of God. Need to come back to your first love. Jared's going to lead us in the song. Won't you come while together standing as we sing?